shindig. Still case number GE12636.
Good job,
yeah,
it's Sue.
636, and it is $1,399.
$1,399 is the 600. Yep. Okay. All right. Good, Scott. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kolk. We're broadcasting live from the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It's approximately 9 o'clock, March 12th. We're meeting for a work session on a couple of cases. One would be GE12636, and another is GE1399. This is the first chance the commission has had in a work session to discuss the recent changes in the case. So typically in a work session, it's a chance for the commission, commissioners and staff to discuss things, typically not seeking outside interaction for anything. But if a commissioner does have a question, that's always appropriate. So I don't have any opening comments other than that. I turn it over to Randy or Julie.
Ms. Chairman, I just look forward to the discussion and discuss some options, and hopefully we can get this thing resolved.
Okay, thank you.
I have no opening comments.
All right. Well, it's Commissioner Crispin's portfolio. So do you have any guidance before we start, Randy?
Well, we issued the cease and desist some time ago. My understanding is he's asking for the cease and desist to be lifted. Feels he's made progress on getting some additional capital in order to pay off farmers. And as I look at things, though, I don't see evidence of the capital coming in, only plans that these things are going to happen. So I still have a great deal of concern about the whole situation. I'm wondering from Sue if the complainants, the farm complainants, have been satisfied and have withdrawn their complaints, or if we still have active complaints that would give us the authority or responsibility or whatever the case may be to move this into an insolvency.
And I did talk to both of the individuals that had filed a claim, and Ray Miller submitted his withdrawal of claim last week to us. That was the second claim that was received, I believe, on February 7th. And the one that was originally received at the end of January was from Farmers Direct. And I received a call from Jason at Farmers Direct yesterday. And he said that they had received a wire transfer payment. And he was out of the office, and he would be submitting a withdrawal. He intended to submit a withdrawal of that claim and when he's back in the office, either on Wednesday or Thursday of this week. And as of right now, we do not have any other claims pending against Earth Harvest Mills. I mean, no filed claims.
Has there been four total over the course of this?
Yes.
Two earlier, and those were completely satisfied, or?
Those were paid 100%.
Okay. And these two most recent ones, how much are they?
The one claim is, Ray Miller. He is owed $23,319, and he received a $5,000 wire transfer, so the balance that he would be owed is a little over $18,000. And then Farmers Direct, the amount of their claim was for $131,000. They have a credit sale contract that they submitted, and that credit sale contract was for approximately $86,000. And they have been given a second deferred payment contract for just a little over $44,000. And that's the one that Jason at Farmers Direct said that they intend to submit their claim or to withdraw their claim on.
And the dates on those two contracts, Sue?
Well, the earlier date, I have to go back and find
payment
that,
dates.
That one. The contract that I mentioned, the $86,000 one, that one was signed in September of 2012, and that one does not have an ending date for when payment has to be made on it.
So do they
and then the other one?
Payments to Farmers Direct? Like any money given to them?
They made a $10,000 payment last week to them. And then the second one that they provided to Farmers Direct on March 5th is for $44,262.
The contract?
The credit amount sale. Of the credit sale contract, the second credit sale contract.
Does it have a due date?
March 5th.
Oh, I'm sorry.
2013.
I thought that's...
Doesn't
that's when they sign
and that
it.
Provides for that contract provides for payment by the end of May of 2013.
That's
is what they're giving them to make payment.
Their total with Farmers Direct is $131,000.
Correct.
And then that's broke down into these two.
Correct. And then since I last met with the commission, I did receive two additional signed credit sale contracts, which would take care of some conversion from what is owed on the cash side to the indemnity fund side. One of the contract amounts is for $25,949, and the second one is for Curtis cost one $17,260.
So how many more outstanding bills do they have to farmers for grain?
Well, they owe Delbert is signed. They owe a David Hager on the cash side. $4,029.26.
How much was it?
$4,029.26. And then they owe a John Qualen, $34,407. I don't have a copy of that signed contract, but I got an email from Mr. Qualen some time ago saying that he had signed the deferred payment contract, but he didn't return it to Earth Harvest Mills, and it was in his desk drawer. If we had an insolvency, it's very likely if the judge made the same decision in this insolvency, assuming we end up with an insolvency, that the judge in our last insolvency did. We had a farmer that came to us. In our records, we had a credit sale contract that he hadn't signed. He presented the judge with a contract that he had signed, and he had indicated it was in his records, and the judge considered it to be a valid credit sale contract claim. So, I mean, there is potential for that to be on the valid credit sale contract claim category. And then we have Jewel Melhoff, and he's owed $4,311. I can get a copy to you. And then there is a Lewis Siebold who was owed $6,017.38, and I have a copy of a signed credit sale contract from him also.
And that amount was six what?
$6,017.38.
But that's a credit sale.
That will be a credit sale now. Yes, these what I'm actually looking at, and where I'm getting my information from is a payables report from the end of November that Tim put together for one of our meetings when we were, I can't remember if it was right before or right after we had had a discussion with Grayson, and he put together this was the amount of the delinquent debt that was owed. The delinquent debt hasn't changed. My list has different deferred payment contract amounts that are due on it also. 70% has been paid to some of the people on here.
Sue, can you put together something that this is all good, but it's very difficult to keep track of? could you put together almost like what he looked like November 1st of 2012 for all the things we've talked about, what he looked like February 28th of 2013, and what he looks like as of, I pick a date this week.
Okay.
Because I just, this is all good discussion, but to keeping all these numbers straight, and he paid this person, and I'm very concerned that we're keeping all the numbers
straight.
We just
need the bottom. We kind of need to know he owes this much.
The grain debt.
This many people, and
what we need to know.
What's still out there.
But for the grain.
The things
that we read. Yeah, for the grain.
Right, I agree.
That's and some of the extraneous discussion, while it may be good information, it doesn't really relevant to what we do. I mean, we're worried about what we have jurisdiction on.
Right.
So, in my opinion.
I agree. It advises, though, in terms of whether there's going to be cash to
pay
some
of
the stuff off, whether he's making any money.
And I will work on this, and I will probably end up working with Grayson on this, because Tim is the one that has been keeping a...
And that's fine.
Excel worksheet, and he's out of the office this week and next week, and so.
Has Grayson been providing the information to keep that updated like we had requested? Is that the information that's supposed to come in weekly?
Christy has been providing the information to Tim and I, yes.
Okay, but is that the weekly reports that it says here did not do under the MOA? I don't know if it's the same thing. That's what I'm asking.
Yes, that's where the information would come from. And the reason that we included the did not provide is, you know, there are some weeks where I am calling to get that information rather than it coming automatic. And
well, Alana brought up a good point that I don't know what the right time to address it is, but the MOA had five provisions that they were supposed to do. I don't know if we can switch. Do you guys have any other questions about before I jump to that? Because I just want to make sure that we get a feel for what they did or didn't do from the MOA.
Okay.
And that kind of ties back to Alana's question. Is it the first page, storing grain in unlicensed space? Are we confident that that's not happening?
Which one are you looking at?
Just the first page of the MOA. GE12 should be that.
Bottom
paragraph.
2010. Yes.
Okay, so this is... So all the grain being stored is in a licensed space.
Oh, I see what you're looking at.
Okay, check.
We, for the times that Tim has been out there, has physically stopped in at the elevator, and look, they have not had grain in any unlicensed space.
Okay.
He did not find any.
Failure to issue scales tickets for grain received. Do we have any concerns of that?
That is not a concern, no. Since 2010.
Failure to issue warehouse receipts, number 3.
That was an issue that was resolved back in 2010, and that had to do with all of the grain that was received at Harvey for farmers that...
Right, but we're confident that this is not a problem.
Not a problem today.
And the fourth one, failure to convert scale tickets in a timely manner?
That one continues.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a big deal. And then the fifth one, failure to provide a current storage and handling policy to the commission?
And that was resolved.
Okay, so... How is that resolved? Failure to provide a current storage and handling policy to the commission, was that just an standard operating procedure? Or
they just had to create a policy that they post at their elevator and submit it to the commission.
Okay.
If it changes, you file it at renewal. So
when we issued this cease and desist back in December, I guess it was, right?
No,
we just did it.
I'm sorry, not the cease and desist, the MOA.
Memorandum.
Yeah. Agreement. That was in late December.
Yes.
And so have they... complied or not complied with the memorandum of agreement?
They have not fully complied.
Okay, so what are the consequences for that? For both of anybody that can answer that question.
Well, and the things they were supposed to do are on page 6. The old stuff was on page 1, but the current, what they promised to do is page 6, correct, Sue?
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, okay. And the reason there was a memorandum of agreement, it was at Grayson's request because the commission, the staff, not the commission, but the staff was ready to file a complaint and request a consent order. I mean, it's the same procedure where staff says there's a violation that we need to take formal action on. We file a formal document and we can litigate it and go to hearing. Or sometimes the person you complain against agrees and they sign a consent order like we in the damage complaints, you know, the one call complaints, we do that. This was one step back from that, sort of like a consent order, but a little less at Grayson's request, which is where he made a promise. Okay? Consent order is also a promise. He says, yeah, I did it. I promise to fix things. This is a promise, like a contract. Okay? So the option for breaking the promise is to go back, escalate back up to formal complaint. It's not something that you do for like an insolvency, because we get a claim for that, but it's the formal complaint and a possible penalty and closing him down and all the different consequences for violation of the law.
And that's kind of what I was walking back to, is that something prompted you and Sue and I think quite honestly Commissioner Fetch at that time to do this.
Right.
And so I'd be very curious to know what both of you think from what you saw that caused you to recommend this to Bonnie, and then this resulted to where we're at now.
Well, from my standpoint, and I think Sue needs the answer too, but from my standpoint, it's the cash, the unconverted overdue cash purchases, because that's a default right there. The credit sale is a default when the day rolls around. So you've kind of got two or three categories. If there is still a cash purchase that was not converted, that was on the books a year ago when we were talking to him and was still on the books and still on, like rolling seeds, okay, and still on the books and still on the books, then that's a violation for a very long period of time, okay? If someone signed a credit sale contract to convert that obligation and was supposed to be paid by December and hasn't been paid and could, that's a violation, a non-payment violation, not a non-conversion violation, for a shorter period of time. And so seeing the numbers that you just asked for, like in a simple sheet that I could read.
So is cash, so is converted.
Yes, because before I could answer, has there been any improvement, I need to go back over that sheet that we have worked with Grayson on many times, but it's been many months. And the Rowland one sticks out like the elephant in the room because it's such a big number, a big proportion. So, Sue, I don't know if you have in your head those results, like the final tally.
Would there be anything that you would say as a legal advice that would cause us to even consider lifting the cease and desist today?
If the only way that I think, given the experience with the history, is if there was some very, very, very tight control over receiving grain. And I'm not sure how that gets played out in practice. I know we have had cease and desist where receiving grain required commission approval, and we've had them where receiving grain required actual cash, not 10, not 30, I think. I mean, saying 30 days to pay in cash is just like saying you can receive grain.
You truly brought that up, I think, a little bit when Grayson was here. I wouldn't be against something like that, but I don't think, for me personally, I'd even consider that today till I got to look at that spreadsheet that shows where we're at and see the trend line. And then maybe if that shows a trend moving the right way, that might be something to consider. That's just me, though. I don't know what Randy's thoughts or Julie.
I, Mr. Chairman, do not think we should lift the cease and desist order at this point. I think I have kind of a plan in mind, but I have a couple questions for various people.
Absolutely.
If I could follow through.
Can I
comment
on something that
Alana
said?
Please, correct me.
I think the one company that you're referring to is probably located up in the northeastern part of the state, and there wasn't a cease and desist. There was actually an insolvency.
Oh, it was after.
For that company, the $50,000 bond was used to pay the $900,000 with the claimants, and then that company aligned with another, with a Russian company, and came back in and applied to a license again with the commission. They were granted a license conditionally based upon the fact that they would file a slightly higher bond than what was required based on their capacity, and also that they made payment either prior to the delivery of the grain or on the date that the grain was received.
Okay. Sorry, I keep forgetting.
That's okay. So it's a little bit different, but.
Two questions for Sue. Just offhand, just short answers. The amount of cash sale money that's owed. Are we looking at 500,000, a million, 3 million?
Cash sales owed is somewhere between 900,000 and a million.
Okay.
With the bulk of it due to Rowland. Rowland Seeds is, according to the information that my records, Rowland Seeds is owed around $600,000 out of that, maybe 950, without actually going through these figures and getting what Grayson has done as new grain deliveries has been made. He has been making some payments on the old debt, and I really cannot even.
To Rowland.
To Rowland. I cannot begin to tell you what that amount is.
Well, that's close enough. That. It would make an enormous difference here if Rowland's contracts were converted to a credit sale contract.
Yes, it would.
And that's one of the things he promises in his email this morning is that he's working on that. With that, I'd like to ask Josh, did you go through these corporation papers? Every couple years it changes. It starts out, there's like 50,000 shares of common stock at $1. Then a year or two later, there's some preferred stock. And then the preferred stock changes. And then there's another issuance of preferred stock. And then that changes. Is that an indicator? Do we assume that those preferred stocks were paid off with the proceeds from the new issuances?
Without going through some greater detail, I don't know. It could be that they brought on additional equity investors, kind of like what he's trying to do now. That could be what they're doing is they create additional classes of shares and then sell those to potential investors to bring them in to generate more cash. But I don't know without actually reading through these.
And I think we may need some information from Grayson, I would guess, because I kind of took a quick look at the articles of amendment dated September 2003 and then a fourth articles of amendment sometime in 2006. And there is where it talks about the stock, it does talk about, there's language in both of them that says within 30 days after notice of redemption of Class A stock has been received by the holder, the full amount owing for the Class A stock shall be paid in full in cash. So we may need some information from Grayson in order to know whether any of that stock has been paid or been converted or whatever has happened to it. Is that what?
Probably. Have the most current on file, so this is what they have.
This is all they have, they told me.
Okay.
I'd like to read through it, then I can get back to you.
Toward the back of these, there's one. It's a Secretary of State document. It's dated May 14th of 2008. Has a little one circled up right at the top of the page. A little handwritten number one encircled.
Oh, and the next one is two.
It talks about $20,000 of C stock, par value $20. So that would tell me there's 1,000 stocks. Mm-hmm. But then at another point, it talks about 20,000 stocks.
There's another one, though. Preferred D stock, 100 shares on the next page.
These are very confusing, but if he wants to take in, as he talked about when he was here, more equity money, do we assume it's a matter of just filing these papers? Or how do we know then that someone is actually going to buy those stocks?
Well, you know they're going to buy it when the money shows up.
Yeah.
And which is nothing to really do with it. This is simply the record of what is they're allowed to legally do. at the Secretary of State.
So as we evaluate this thing, how do we know when this ceases to just be big talk and when there's really some money? Apparently this has gone on for a while, fall or winter, and a few days ago he was in, and now this email this morning. But it's always these things that are going to happen and are right ahead of us. But when, how do we know that some money's actually available to them?
When the bills are paid. I mean, the bucket that deals with grain coming in and whether it's paid on time is when it's, you're going to know when it's paid. And the bucket that deals with how his corporation is doing is, unless we do demand financials consistently, you're not going to see that. You might get the bills paid and he might be failing and ready for bankruptcy over here, but the grain's paid. And that's we don't worry about it. Exactly. And many businesses are in that situation and many are not.
That's what goes back to that.
If he pays everybody off or converts them to the credit sale contract and we remove the cease and desist, are there terms from that point forward that we can require him to have cash on him, you know, to have a stricter control over how he handles new grain and doesn't take on any more debt for a time? Can there be terms to the removal of the cease and desist?
I think there can.
At that point?
I think there can.
So we get it all taken care of, buttoned up, everyone's paid off. We really don't have any jurisdiction anymore, except for now he's going to be taking grain in again. And
yeah, you're
we don't
worried
want
about
getting into the same
each
problem.
Delivery, yes, because right. You have the experience. It's the same as the one up that I mixed up. What was it, Northland? Northwood Mills. Okay. Same kind of concept where you had this business that went under and went through insolvency and hardly anybody got very much. And then they came back and wanted to go back into business again because they had new investment. Mm-hmm. And the commission's going, this is a little scary. So that's when they impose the higher bond. And that's always an option. You can impose a higher bond right now. But there might be consequences to that you want to weigh into the decision. And that cash.
But the Northwood model, if I could, maybe my memory is a little off too, was much different business model than this. This was their previous elevator had some problems because of one delivery they oversold, if you will. Yeah. And they had a pretty decent model. Once they got their feet back under them, they didn't have all these moving variables. And there wasn't, I'm going to borrow money from this person to that person. It was just get back into operation.
Right. But if you got that big chunk of investment, and it's different in the sense that,
we shouldn't compare apples.
It's risky up there, but it was like one avenue of risky, whereas Grayson's got about 10 things
going on. We did put those provisions on. We increased the bond, and we were sent, I think the inspectors probably went out there a little bit more often.
Well, and he, my concern with this is, I mean, it looks to me like he may be on track to getting the money to pay off or convert these things to credit. So that's great. And then he's kind of meeting our demands, but and it's not really our concern whether the other people, you know, that get the loan and his corporate structure are satisfied or not, except for the fact that he's going to short people in the future moving forward on the grain sales again, which is our piece of it. So that's where I am concerned.
Here's what I'm thinking, and I'm throwing out a statement and then asking Alana if this seems logical and right. If we hurry in the next day or two before the withdrawal of the complaint comes, that the person said he was going to send it on Thursday or something like that, we could petition the court to go into insolvency and people would get about a nickel and a dollar on these cash sales. Uh-huh. It's certainly not a good resolution, and probably 35 people lose jobs over there. Uh-huh. If we give him a little bit more time, and I'm thinking like, what is today, the 12th?
It is the 12th.
So, like, maybe Friday the 22nd? These 2 weeks, what's left of the 2 weeks? Keep the... By then, if this is right, that complaint is withdrawn, then we really can't petition to go into insolvency anyway.
That's correct.
Right.
We keep the cease and desist order on, which is our incentive for him to get going on this and not just keep talking about it. And if by that date, if the Rowland bills are converted to contracts, that substantially changes what's available if this does go into insolvency. And frankly, if the Rowland sales are converted to contracts and Rowland or this number two venture fund comes through with the $500,000, they're probably in pretty decent shape. And at that point, I think then we'd probably be safe to lift the cease and desist order if no other complaints have come in. But in the meantime, I think that's probably a reasonable amount of time. And in that time, he should be able to get certainly Rowland transitioned over, follow through on his other cash sales that are sitting out there that are maybe we haven't gotten complaints, but they're late, get those transferred over to the contracts, and see where we're at the end of next week.
Okay. Julie?
I think that's certainly a doable scenario. And I did wanted to make one little statement because I want to be sure that I haven't neglected to tell you this. The statutes on insolvencies do not say when a claim comes in, you file. They say the definition of insolvency is refuses, neglects, or is unable to pay. Okay? And so in theory, you could go in on an insolvency without a claim.
With a staff recommendation.
With a staff recommendation. We have not, the commission, to my knowledge, has never done that in the 100 years it's been doing this, is what I understand. And it's a proof thing, you know, and it is like you have definitely know that someone is willing to stand on the line and say they neglected to pay me when you have a claim come in. But in theory, it's an option if you were going to change precedent. I just wanted to be sure.
Can you say that theory one more time? I'm sorry. I was looking.
Well, what I was saying is the statute, we keep saying if we have a claim, you know, we can go do insolvency. If we don't have a claim, we won't do insolvency. The statute doesn't say the commission shall open an insolvency when a claim comes in. The statute says the definition of insolvency is that the elevator or the warehouseman refuses, neglects, or is unable to pay.
Upon
proper demand. Okay, so when we have required that written evidence, it's the same, it's like everything else. You know, if the farmer is willing to put it in writing and say, I'd made demand and they didn't pay, I'm ready to go with this, then we're ready to go. And we haven't ever done it ahead of that time. But it is not prohibited by law. It would just be a deviation from precedent.
So based on the information that we currently have, the commission could make that case.
Except the definition of insolvency is not what you know as a CPA or bankruptcy. The definition of insolvency is refuses, neglects, or is unable to pay. On demand.
Yeah. Almost like a
so
pipeline.
He's neglected and unable.
Yes, and we would be in there trying to prove he's unable to pay, which is a substantially bigger burden for the commission than having the claims that where someone else has said, I made demand and he didn't pay me. The check bounced.
I'm with Randy on this. That's not a desirable outcome because people are, a nickel on a dollar.
We just want to make sure the nickel and dollar doesn't become 3 cents and a dollar.
And I wouldn't advise it. I just wanted to be sure I wasn't misadvising what the status of the law is.
As long as there isn't more, I think we've taken care of that concern with the cease and desist. Your last comment about that the nickel and dollar is going to become less.
There's more people we don't know about.
Well, they know what this, they know, you know what those are.
Hopefully there's not another set of books.
The ledger is of his unclaimed. Yeah, well, that. But so the problem, this has been going on since 2010. We're going on 3 years. So I think that we have, the commission has been extremely willing to try to work through this and help this guy out. I don't see any reason to change that right now when he's got, my question is the timing. I'm almost inclined to give him a little more time than the 22nd, because if he doesn't have it by the 22nd, what's our, if not then this?
Well, frankly, my initial thought was this Friday. But in looking at this, there's two parts with whoever Rowland Seeds is. I don't know if that's a corporation or an individual really or what, but whoever Rowland Seeds is looking at investing $500,000, and there's the issue of converting their debt into a contract. Well, converting that debt into a contract, that should be done today. I mean, it's in the best interest of the other customers. It's in the best interest of Rowland Seeds. They would go from having, if this thing does go under, they'd go from having about $30,000 in recovery to $280,000 in recovery. So why they don't do this immediately, I don't know. But I can see with the request for them to being apparently a big customer here and having an interest in the facility staying operational, maybe this is reasonable that they're going to sink some equity money into it. And so I can see where that takes a little bit of research, and that's why I thought give them another week and a half. But they aren't coming out from under a shell here. They've been involved with this a while. I don't see that it should take them 2 weeks to figure out whether they want to keep this going or not.
I hope you are right. I have visited with Roy Bruin, who is the name behind the business, the face behind the name or whatever, way back in November. And I cannot tell you the logic or the man's reasoning as to why he's not signing the contracts. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, back in 2010, he did. He has not signed them, and I think that if he gets these contracts signed within a day or two, that would be next to a miracle. I don't know if it would be our place to call him and talk to him about signing them.
It's a game time. Mm-hmm. There's something that we're not seeing.
Right.
And so it's time they're either going to do it now or we shut them down.
Okay.
That's my opinion. We give them whatever period of time, whether it's March 22nd or whatever, I don't care, I guess. But there's something funny that this hasn't happened yet. And this is the same discussion we had 3 years ago and we had 2 months ago. So I'm fine with March 22nd or March, whatever. Would you recommend, Julie? Because I don't.
Well, the second piece on the venture fund, I mean, maybe we say you should have the Rollins seats converted by Friday, because that could happen. The equity piece and this additional venture fund we need by, I was going to say April 1st, because he says in his thing, bridge loan that would pay up most of the farm debt within the next 2 weeks, that would be the 26th. So just because what I don't want is for him to come and say, it's just going to take another week, and, are we going to be inclined to say,
Well, but that goes back to, I think, what's your point or your point. But let's say April 1st, and he's done everything and everything's good. We could lift the cease and desist and move on. If we come back April 1st and let's say he's got rid of all the claims, but we still don't feel comfortable, then that's what we have to decide what to do. If we want to break new ground and still do an insolvency, we could do that. Or we just be aware of it and keep tracking it. I mean, kind of like you said, lay out the game plan.
Yeah, our timing?
I don't think the extra time beyond the 22nd is in our best interest or really Grayson's, because from our perspective, to me, the biggest thing is getting Rowland to transfer stuff into a contract.
Okay, so what do we do on March 24th?
If we come back on March 22nd or 24th, and this is, then we visit it earlier, So if this hasn't been done and this guy never sent back this release from his complaint,
mm-hmm.
then I think we just go into insolvency and be done with it.
And but I was hearing that March 22nd, that first important deadline, do we go forward with insolvency or not? And that's plenty of time for him to withdraw his claim.
Because he said he'd have it done on Thursday.
Yeah,
right.
This week. And if we get to the 22nd and there are no complaints, then I guess we can start looking for the next week of the last week of March at whether do we want to go into an insolvency when there are no complaints or not. We don't have to do it, I suppose, since it's never been done. Frankly, I think if he can't get it done in a week and a half, he probably can't get it done at all, and it's going to happen based mm-hmm. on what I've seen.
But then we'd know the question that Julie was bringing out, I think was a good one, that we would know within 2 weeks from this email about the venture fund, so that could be considered in our decision based on the information we have March 22nd. We'd also get information back on this before we would make a decision on an insolvency. Because I think you wanted to get that information, right?
Well, I'm just thinking if we take him on this, what he's telling us, and I think he needs to start realizing that, you know, he's obligated for the timelines he sets out as well. He says, you know, in here on the venture fund that is going to provide the rest of the money, or we hope, that would he should know within the next 2 weeks. We received this on March 12th. 2 weeks from that is the 26th. So I don't want to spend a ton of time dickering about it. I'm just saying, you know, is there any merits to following what he lays out here and using that as the time frame for what we tell him?
Okay, I'm fine on the 26th.
It's Friday or Tuesday.
All right. Well, let's go with March 26th.
Okay, March 26th.
And so the cease and desist stays as it is at this point. And the insolvency stays unfiled at this point. And any action or requests for a staff on the memorandum of understanding, any further you want us to prepare?
I want that piece
documents.
Of paper that shows a trend line from November of 2012. And you could even, if you want to pick a dot before then, that's fine. But 4 points, let's say for sure, being November of 2012, December of 2012, and where we are at like March 15th or something.
Okay.
One other thing that I would like to have happen. If Grayson does what I am hoping he does and gets to whoever you said Rowland Seeds is, maybe today or tomorrow, and gets his contract signed and maybe gets that equity money, when we have that information, I'd like to see us have a special meeting and be able to lift the cease and desist order.
Mm-hmm. With some conditions, in my opinion. I'd like to look at what conditions we place on that.
Right.
Such as raising the bond or putting other things in place.
Requirements for cash sales and proof immediately to us or, you know, whatever those conditions
You know, if
be.
He's got Rowland and a whole bunch of the others converted into contracts mm-hmm. and he's got some operating capital and I really think that cease and desist and his wanting to get going on purchasing some grain is what gives us leverage to potentially do this faster, too.
And he does have good logic for wanting to... I did appreciate what he was saying, but it's just, you know, in our role of protecting the consumer, I don't think we can. I think we'd look... we don't have... He hasn't got the track record to suggest that we could lift that cease and desist safely at this point, I don't think.
Do we have a responsibility to place any advertising or a news release or something on the subject? Because, frankly, if somebody's been doing business there or have heard of other people see this facility operating for a decade already, and you roll into town with a semi-load of organic wheat, I don't know that farmers all read through everything to make sure all the posters are up and all that detail is there. How does a farmer know that there's a cease and desist order on this guy?
Well, I don't know if a farmer would know
I don't know if there's a farmer within a 200-mile radius that will sell grain to Earth Harvest Mill, to be quite honest with you. I don't mean that in a bad way, but I think what I say is a perfectly honest answer. I think that he owes Rowland as much as he owes Rowland, because except for Rowland and Farmers Direct up to a point, I don't know that he has another source for purchasing grain. He's, you know, I think about a little $5,000 load from Velva, and Velva's asking for money when they are at the time that they're making delivery. So, I'm like I said, I don't mean to say that in a bad way, but I think that Earth Harvest really has probably burned enough bridges that this Rowland is maybe one of the only sources that I. You know, if things turn around, maybe things would turn around for Earth Harvest Mills and they would see more farmers. If you take a look at our claimants, I think on the cash claimants, I think that the only individual from North Dakota that is owed money is Jewel Melhoff.
And it is Grayson's obligation not to take the grain even if the semi-load rolls up.
That would be some kind of criminal.
Well, it would be a violation of our statute, and yes, there are civil and criminal penalties.
I just throw a thought out for my colleagues that, and for elevator staff, if you will, that about 4 years ago, the commission sat here, and the commission had never pursued a pipeline violation. We never had. We had the authority to do it, but we never did it. And we saw these problems with pipelines developing where folks weren't calling before they did, companies were getting out of control. And Alana and I sat down and said, we're going to do one. We've never done it. I said, well, we're going to do one. And it took us 6 months to do it. We broke precedent all the way along. But now, 4 years later, we've got a program where we've at least started to ebb the flow on pipeline violations. This may be the time for grain elevator insolvencies where we don't wait until people file claims, that if you, Sue, or Tim see somebody out there that's not doing what they should be, we'd be proactive and we file the insolvency and let them prove why we're wrong. Because, I mean, it would be a functional shift, but the times have mm-hmm. changed now. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we have to be bound by, I mean, not bound by that, but I think it's just something to consider.
Well, maybe as a more of a precursor to the insolvency, which is ends up people losing money if we see the problems developing over time because we're watching, which Tim did, you know, in 2010 that identify the problems, maybe we at that point do the cease and desist more and publicize them as a precursor to Sorry, you guys are in trouble, you got to straighten out your books and then we'll let you be back in business. I don't
know. I know that Aaron's stock, I won't say went up, but our pipeline safety people, when the pipeline company started realizing that our folks could file violations against them and they'd be supported, his stock really went up when he talked to these people. So even Tim out there, if the elevators get a sense that Tim has the ability to recommend something to you which could result in insolvency, it would raise his authority or his ability, I think, to influence their behavior. Separate discussion, but I just opened the door a little bit there with that.
I would agree, I think. And I'm not that I'm not favorable, but, yeah, I think there's a fine line I would...
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know if I'd want to do something that really harms a business enough in a way that they end up shutting their doors down either, and maybe if...
And we run the same balance with pipeline companies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, this was one
good discussion
we noticed. We renewed their license last July.
Mm-hmm.
Would we not have had a chance at that point to look more carefully and say, listen, you got all this bad debt. You haven't been following our memorandum. We can't renew your license. Are we looking at this sort of stuff when we renew licenses?
I guess we haven't in the past, but that doesn't mean that we can't do things differently. I think if we're going to start doing that, I almost think it would be easier if we were asking for financials.
Well, thought about it. Maybe you didn't, but I did. But it's the same. The memorandum of agreement wasn't in effect in July.
Right.
Okay, so... It but wasn't. They weren't in violation. There had been a lot going on, but it's the same thought process and the same. And it's. I'm not saying it couldn't be done. It's kind of the same discussion, same proof. You would have I think we're going to not renew your license. You get a notice. You can have a hearing on it like you would on a complaint. We would have to show why like we would on a complaint. So I've been, you know, kind of having that balance in my head at each stage.
Yeah, because so, if this had gone south and all these, and say he sold a bunch more grain between, or took in a whole bunch more grain from July till now, and there were a whole bunch more customers with bad debt, I think people would look at us and say, why did you give him his license?
But we knew that he had started, this is older debt, he had started to pay cash, mm-hmm. and we knew that, and we were watching while he was still taking grain, that he was paying cash. Mm-hmm. And so we were, I mean, we've had like thousands of these conversations with him. And so, yes, I agree with you completely, and I don't know that you need all the financials. What you need is the grain in and the conversion, and the grain in and the conversion. And we did see that being complied with. The old stuff was what was lingering. And so I guess that's why I didn't push it any further at that time.
Well, it's one potential hook that we have to try to, again, avoid an insolvency.
Last thing on this, I know we talked about switching. My original suggestion was the 22nd, and then we decided to go to the 26th because he had asked for 2 weeks. I'm going to be in Dickinson that day, and the 27th is our meeting day. Could we give him about 18 hours less than 2 weeks and address this on Monday afternoon on the 25th?
That's fine.
Fine with me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So did you want a work session that afternoon then, Randy, or what were you thinking?
Yes. That's what I would like to see.
Okay.
Can we make a...
We can schedule a work session.
You could say, like, his filing would be by noon, and you have a work session in the afternoon, something like that. Would that be all right?
Are we going to spell out what we expect him to have done by that time?
Well, we can recap that.
Okay. I think we need to be clear about what we're expecting by that date.
Yes, and what I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong... The claim withdrawn, that's not what he has to do, but if he can encourage it, fine. And the Rallin conversion or payment or some combination thereof.
He should be working on all of these.
Right.
That aren't cash sales. But the Rallin one is just that's a deal breaker. If that one's not done.
So maybe you say further, I mean, improvement in that number, including Rallin, definitely including Rallin, and then the equity investment. And at that point, you might see the equity investment, but I think then if you're going to go to conditions on continued operation, that equity has to go to cleaning up that old debt, period, done. I don't care what other machines he has to buy.
You put together a memo of what you and Sue are going to, we think we're going to ask for, and run it back by all of us.
Yes, we will. We'll do a draft email, and then.
Okay. And he says here that his venture fund loan would pay off most of the farm debt within the next 2 weeks with an equity investment following the bridge loan. Yeah.
Well,
I'm concerned too that Alana, because when he was here and he talked about some of these loans he was getting, it sounded to me like he was going to be giving people like $1,000 checks. I'd like to see a lot more of it going to the people paying off the bad debt.
I agree with you.
Investment in the company.
So.
In the work session, can we have the motion? And if we choose
we can
file the papers to move forward to insolvency?
Yeah, we could do all that.
We can, so long as staff has sufficient evidence to be able to get on a witness stand and say he's unable to pay, unable to pay upon proper demand. We will be working on that question and coming back to you with.
But let's do it. Let's
whether we can prove it or not.
We have that would be Monday at the end of the day, but we could have a commission meeting on Wednesday. So maybe let's just schedule the work session now, and then we can kind of play that out.
Yes.
Because I don't know between Monday and Wednesday, a regular meeting. If there'd be a little, if there's a gain, we could sure do it. But if there's not, we do have a meeting scheduled the next 2 days later.
Yeah.
But so for Randy and Julie, I want to wrap this up at 10, and we'll get way behind schedule today. Do you guys have a time Monday that works for you? I'm open all afternoon.
1:30?
That's fine by me, Randy.
1:30 work?
1:30 work for Sue and Alana? Mm-hmm. Or if you could talk to Esther and make that work?
Okay.
Anything else for the good of the order? We got the, you're going to send us back the draft, and then I'm sure there'll be more discussion. Okay. Going once, going twice for my colleagues? All right. We'll close the work session on case numbers GE12636 and GE1399, and we'll take a quick 2-minute break.